My Say, Your Say. Your chance to have a crack. Get on air now. Just call 9429 1116.
Well, a very interesting question was put to me today by a keen-eyed football fan with a nose for a good probing cue. And that question was, on the back of Melbourne's failure on the weekend against Essendon, how do we view Paul Roos's time at the Melbourne Football Club? Has it been a success? Of course, Paul Roos has planned a changeover. His timing to hand the reins over to Simon Goodwin coincides really with the end of the maximum period he was ever going to coach the club. Paul Roos joined the Demons in 2014. That season, Melbourne finished 17th on the ladder. Last year, the side rose to 13th on the ladder, though hardly spectacularly. And this year, after a most encouraging start with a strong pre-season and a goodish win against GWS, failed dismally when asked to grasp the nettle against a beleaguered Essendon side with all of their travails and go two and zip. Has Paul Roos been a success? And my take is that he has been a monumental fail. This is a coach that has had a reported seven-figure-a-year contract subsidised heavily by the AFL, and he was put in place to turn around the fortunes of a flagging football club that had plenty of young talent at its behest, an enormous amount of early draft picks, but a history of either turning these players into non-AFL-level performers or losing them to other clubs. The culture issue was stark and Roos was seen as the man for the fix. From the moment he came to the club, it seemed to be that he was cajoled. Unfortunately, even the one-year extension came with the caveat that I'm handing it over to Simon Goodwin. No hungry coach in the AFL writes his own death warrant before he even starts coaching. And for Paul Roos, it was 2 years, 3 years max. That is no way to manage a list. Footballers are acutely aware of playing for the boss. They know their football lives may depend on it. So to live in this period of uncertainty, and if not uncertainty, well, there is certainty with the replacement, in this period of unparalleled, well, indecision from the club and from Paul Roos as to his future, means that players are really for 3 years playing for a coach that may well not have any say in their long-term footballing future. The culture hasn't changed at Melbourne. We don't see a marked difference in the approach to the game of a Jack Watts, poor on the weekend, Nathan Jones was good and remains good, and various other players for whom spasmodic performances have become the norm. And Jesse Hogan was disappointing. Roos tells us the players had fat heads and were fried. And in round two, that's a horrid explanation for the loss to Essendon. The bottom line is Melbourne are still flaky. Melbourne under Roos has pumped in much more young talent from the top end of drafts. And Melbourne, as we sit here today, continues to be a grave concern for their supporters and a source of derision for the rest of us AFL fans who look at Melbourne as a consistent basket case. Paul Roos has been expensive, Paul Roos has been subsidised, and Paul Roos has taken Melbourne, as we sit here today, if anywhere, on a very short journey that's still in the rear vision mirror, brightly reflects the very worst of what he took over. I think it's been a dead set fail. 9429 1116. Has Paul Roos's time at Melbourne been a success? Has the idea from almost day one that he wasn't going to be there for very long at all been part of the problem? I think it has been. His inability to embrace the job wholly, like every other coach does when they are appointed, Remember the last person that was cajoled into coaching was Malcolm Blight, and that failed terribly. So has this been, as I believe it has been, a dead set monumental fail, or has there been an upside? We're going to take your calls on 9 429 1116 and commence with Shane in Roeville. Good evening to you, Shane.
G'day, Finey. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it. I appreciate it. We're going to get some prizes to not encourage our callers, but to reward those who make good sense.
Thanks, Finey. Two quick points. One I'd like to make in regards to Paul Roosen and in regards to, you know, his contract, and say in his defence, you know, he, whether it's been cajoled or not, that's probably not his fault. That's a club issue, because, you know, he would have said, hey, look, I'm willing to help you out for 2 or 3 years, but here are my terms. You either agree to them or not. So I sort of think that's Melbourne's fault more so than Paul Roos. They knew what they were getting into, and he clearly didn't want to do it long term, and that's not his fault if they employed him. The second point I'd like to make is the issue that I have with Paul Roos and his coaching was, I remember even last year, they had a fantastic win over Geelong. They played so well down there and really, you know, had a fantastic win. And then a few weeks later, they lost, and he came out to, and basically blamed you know, the past that lost. And I just felt he needed to, you know, he needed to set the standard and say, hey, the way we played against Geelong has to be, that's the benchmark, and that's where we're at. We don't bring up the past, but the way that we played in that game was not good enough. He didn't need to bring up what had happened 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. I think these are the things that have stood out as being, for me, concerning about Roos. And you are spot on. The terms of his contract and the what I consider to be failing of having a coach that is there for very much an interim period, because it does not lay certain foundations for the players in their mind, and they don't really know who they're, which master they are sort of performing for. And remember, this is young men's livelihoods we're talking here. So we might pretend that it's all about winning games, playing in the team and winning grannies, but the essence of the truth is, for young men on AFL lists, it is also very much, first and foremost, about cementing an AFL career and reaping the lucrative benefits. Because if you're not playing AFL, there's not a league in Australia that gives you the sort of wage you couldn't earn at Macca's. So we're talking about, you know, in terms of setting up for the future, it's chocolate or a complete boiled lolly. So that's a very uncertain environment for players to be setting themselves up for their futures in. But these are the sort of quotes, the notions that worry me about Paul Roos, that he regularly refers to the baggage that was carried by players in their past, you know, dragging with them the history of severe beatings and of lowly finishes on the ladder and being easy beats. This is, that baggage, that psychology, that idea can't be, that should not be mentioned. You know, we look forward and onwards and upwards, never look back. But I think Roos has done a bit of rear vision mirror gazing. And Shane, you make for a good chat. What did you make of his comments that the players had big heads running out onto the ground and appeared fried in the round 2 game against the patchwork team that is Essendon?
Yeah, it made no sense to me, Finey. Like you're probably suggesting, and the thing that maybe suggested to me is that everyone talked up how good their preseason was, but I don't think they rotated. Correct me if I'm wrong, Finey. I don't think they rotated many of their players. They basically had a strong team along the way. So maybe, you know, if he's saying they're fried, well, maybe he should have rested one along the way. Like, I look at it, my team, the Bulldogs, they against Melbourne rested basically all of their senior players. So maybe that's his own fault for not giving them a rest along the way. He just wanted to win every game, and that meant that, you know, maybe they got to this round and they needed a break. It makes no sense to me, but that's all I can come up with.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Shane, hang on to the line. Your call was a great way to kick the discussion off, and I'm going to cheer it with 2 bottles of fine Yarra Valley wines from Kellybrook Winery. In fact, if you mentioned that you heard of Kellybrook Winery on the evening program, you go to Fulford Road in Wonga Park, they will give you 20% off all their prices at the cellar door, and they're already reduced. So please mention SEN at Kellybrook, and 2 bottles of their finest to go to Shane in Roeville. We are going to take a break, but let's try and squeeze Phil and Craigie Byrne in first. Many people want to talk on this matter. Good evening, Phil.
Yeah, hi. How are you going, Bonnie?
Good, thanks.
That's good. Yeah, I agree 100% with last caller. I mean, what right does Melbourne have to have a big head? I mean, yeah, one win into the early season and they've already got a big head. I mean, it just seems absolutely ridiculous.
It's not about, Phil, it's not about them having the right to have a big head, because that happens with footballers potentially, but if a coach identifies that the players ran out onto the ground with a swelled head, hasn't there been some sort of failing by the coaching staff to keep their feet firmly planted on the ground? To be able to observe that and not to be able to short-circuit that and really get their focus in the right direction is a slap on the wrist for himself and his fellow coaches, I would have thought, Phil.
100%. I mean, he's an experienced coach. I'm sure he's been through half of that before, and that just Melbourne earned the right to big head, and Paul Roos should have identified that. I'm a Hawthorn supporter, so to be brutally honest, I'm very lucky. I mean, leading up to the West Coast game, I knew, given the record that West Coast had, I think they've only beat Melbourne three times in the last 14 games that played the MCG. So I was pretty confident with Hawthorn. I was also confident.
Phil, you are sort of dropping out a little bit there, but I just will say this about Hawthorn. People might say, well, how can you compare Hawthorn to Melbourne? Powerhouse, three in a row, four in the last 9 years. It's an unfair comparison. But there is an interesting element to the comparison, and that is the 2008 Hawks that won the flag ahead of schedule, somewhat surprisingly and brilliantly, in that famous victory on grand final day where they stole the march. Of course, did get big heads. And in 2009, surprisingly and disappointingly to the playing group, missed the finals. They certainly did pat themselves on the back for too long and too hard. But the club was strong enough. They saw what was happening to re-ground the feet, to reset the goals. And the response by the players, this core group led by the likes of Mitchell and Hodges and obviously Gibson and Burgoyne, et cetera, has been spectacular. And this year they try and equal the all-time record for consecutive flags. So it's about being able to see what's your club, where they're at. And the other thing about the game against Essendon that is unforgivable for the Melbourne coaching staff, this, they were not blindsided. This was Essendon's line in the sand game, their march to the G. This was the game that the Essendon supporters marked as the day that their supporters would come out in big numbers and wrap their arms around the playing staff and the players that had been banned and support the club. Past champions were there. This was a special day for Essendon. So Melbourne knew that this hodgepodge collection of hired guns, youngsters and some really good Essendon players were going to come hard at them. Surely they gird their loins. They seemed shocked, bewildered that these no-names were in the game. And then in the last quarter, the bewilderment turned to meek surrender. And I think the coaching staff would be very disappointed, not only in the performance of the players, but the preparation and the way they went out on the fielding. Who prepares players? The coaching staff. A break. When we come back, we'll take more calls. Welcome back. 11:16 SEN, 9429 1116. My say, your say tonight. I was asked today whether or not Paul Roos's time at Melbourne had been a success. Given the price tag, given the AFL subsidising this $1 million a year contract, given where they are after two seasons, and especially what they turned out on the weekend, and they will recover from that. Melbourne will play better games. There's a lot of talent down there, but the fact that they slip back in a chance to be two, not a chance, in the gilt-edged home game against the wooden spoon red-hot favourites in Essendon, and they couldn't turn 1-0 into 2-0 when that sort of start has been as rare for Melbourne as hen's teeth, then they will never be forgiven for this loss by some of their fans, nor should they. And Paul Roos today hasn't done much with this team in 2 and a bit years, I feel. Steve's in Berwick. G'day, Steve.
G'day, Finey. Mate, concur with your points and the points of the previous callers. I would put it to you that Roos, if it had been any other coach to offer up the same lame excuses, like he never takes responsibility. He blames the players. He blames everyone else. He blames 6-day breaks, injuries or whatever. But he rarely ever takes responsibility for himself. He vaguely glosses over and says, we as a coaching panel have got to take some responsibility. But he always makes excuses. Now, if it was Damien Hardwick or Nathan Buckley or Brad Scott or anyone of that ilk, they would be absolutely taken to the cleaners by the media and the press. But he is untouchable. He should have been in the movie.
Look, you're right. It's a combination of he is a golden boy and Melbourne supporters are so used to, numbed by, and unable to deliver a stinging response to horribly deflating performances like the one against Essendon, that the coach gets away with it a bit. Because if any other, especially the Melbourne clubs, put in that sort of performance, Richmond, they'd be dumping chicken hearts at Richmond. They'd be lining up with memberships held and pictures of old champions waving at Carlton. Collingwood would see the streets blocked around the Lexus Centre. Even my Saints might rumble their tummies, which they haven't done for a few years. But Melbourne supporters don't really put the fear of God into their coaches, and their coaches, when they're the likes of Paul Roos, carry too much respect to cop much in the media.
Who has he developed, Bonnie? Like, I would put it to you that Johnny Longmire, right, he was there through their premierships, and from what I've read and what I've known from people that I've spoken to are, that have got a close connection with the Swans, have told me that he's an absolute mastermind. Now, you look at the changeover from when Longmire took over, and look, every club and every coach is going to have ups and downs, and you've just got to roll with the punches and deal with injuries and suspension and stuff that comes up that's out of your control on and off the field. I would put it to you that he hasn't missed a beat because of the quality of the person that he is and the stuff that he's brought to the table.
Steve, I'll say this. I've got to say this. Paul Roos was a tremendous coach at Sydney. He coached in an era where the game played by Sydney was constricting. It was premiership winning. It was drought breaking. And for their long awaiting, especially Melbourne Bloods fans, then it was heaven sent. No question about it. But the fact that it was a constricting style that spawned, of course, Ross Lyon as a coach, also Ken Hinckley and Longmire, whose teams are anything but the old Swans of old, or how we perceive Fremantle a bit, is a bit of a, it's a bit of an eyebrow raiser. Remember, in his first season at Melbourne, Paul Roos was all about damage limitation, about stemming the bleeding, turning huge losses into more competitive efforts. And whilst that is a noble ambition, it's not setting the bar very high. And one horrid night against the Swans at the MCG, his old team, Paul Roos conceded a loss the minute the team walked on the ground and played for a defensive style less than expected, sort of heavy beating rather than thrashing. It was a night of surrender for Melbourne. It didn't play well. Last year, the Demons finally, with that great win against Geelong and a couple of other valuable victories against Richmond in particular and the Pies, started to indicate there was a feeling that this team, just by weight of numbers of good players, Jesse Hogan, Jack Viney, is immune from the seemingly malaise that lays over Melbourne Football Club like a fog. He's a dynamo. It looked like these people could lift the club and take them forward. But this year, Hogan has been petulant and seemingly distracted. There is talk of offers from Fremantle. Melbourne cannot surely allow that to happen. This is not Roos's fault, but he needs to get the kid focused. Jack Watts played a stinker on the weekend, defeated by Matt Day. And these players had big heads based on basically nothing. So I really feel that Paul Roos has not brought a style that is recognisable or impressive to Melbourne. I don't believe that they are easily identified as playing this type of game or that type of game that works. They sort of didn't beat the GWS by outrunning them, outgunning them, outkicking them, or out-muscling them. They just got their boots, kicking boots on at the right time and snuck home. And then they got shown, led a merry dance by Essendon. And when they had the ball, it was some guys running, some guys kicking long, some guys handballing backwards, hodgepodge of nothing in particular. The game style looked to me to be improvised at best. Joe's in Doncaster. G'day, Joe.
Good evening, Mark. How's things? All right?
Yeah, very good.
Mate, it'd be interesting to see if Simon Goodwin just overhauls the game plan when he takes over, whenever it is he's taking over. That's when you'll know.
What's their game plan?
Well, whatever Paul Roos is trying to implement.
But can you identify a style, a game plan? I can tell you some for other clubs, but I can't really give you a consistent one for Melbourne that I understand.
Look, I can't. I know they're a team that when they win, they like to celebrate it because their wins have been few and far between. And I'm not a Melbourne supporter, by the way. I'm a Collingwood supporter. So I had an inkling that Essendon was going to lift to that game. And like you mentioned previously, when they were marching and bandying together, that's enough of an alarm bell or a warning sign, if you like.
You bet. It's sorry, Joe, but time's a Guinness. You cannot say that Melbourne could have been blindsided. They were talking about this game for weeks, Essendon. So poorly prepared and, in the end, easily beaten by a team that has been together, as far as game plans go, as a unit for, in relative football terms, 5 minutes. This was a bad loss, and Roos needs to take a fair bit of the blame.